Action, adrenaline, adventure! Welcome, Special Agents to Ride or Die. This is your host, Andrea, and...
This is Nathan.
And this is your radio show for all things Alex Rider, the hit spy series by Anthony Horowitz. Today we will be covering the last two chapters in Stormbreaker.
Ooh, so a very special episode. In.
Nathan, are you ready?
Oh, I am so excited. This is one we've been waiting for a while.
I'm literally so excited to be recording. Oh my god. These last two chapters are so crazy.
They are, as you like to say, buck wild.
They're buck wild. And I hope you're ready to jump in, metaphorically and literally. We're doing a lot of jumping.
Maybe even literarily, considering there is a big jump in this chapter.
Yeah, totally. Ah,
before we spill the tea, yes, we are starting with chapter 16, which is 12 o'clock. So basically, before we do this, should we get into our recap from last time?
Yeah, sure. I wrote a little recap, so...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Alex has discovered Herod Sale's devious plan with the Stormbreakers is to infect all of Britain's school children with a deadly strain of a virus that has been put into computers. Topical. Mm-hmm. The virus will be released on April 1st, which is, in book terms, today, when the Prime Minister who bullied Sale in school pushes the button that puts the computers online. And Alex was also left in the hands of Nadia and Mr. Grin, and was tricked by Nadia and ended up in the tank with the Man of War. He escaped using his Zit Cream gadget, and Nadia got a face full of jellyfish. Alex also made a harrowing escape attempt and managed to get on the cargo plane with Mr. Grin, who was piloting the plane, and Alex made Mr. Grin turn the plane around to go to London. Will Alex be able to stop Sale before it's too late?
Oh, man, and that is where we start this chapter. We start with Alex on the plane with Mr. Grin. They are roughly 50 minutes away from where they gotta be, so Alex has to figure out what he wants to do. He intended to use the radio to call the police when he first got on the plane, but Mr. Grin, he's kind of talented. Mr. Grin does a lot of things, and he's a very scary man. So whenever the radio came in as they entered London airspace, he shut it off real quick. But that's a little bit later before we get to that. With Mr. Grin in the pilot seat, Alex was a little bit afraid of him. He said even with a gun, it would be too dangerous to mess with Mr. Grin. So from there, Alex looked around and he's like, what do I do? Well, there were two bundles laying on the ground, and they told him exactly what he needed to do. So he looked at the bundles, looked up, and was like, ah, man. And he saw Mr. Grin, and Mr. Grin turned around, had that smile, the smile that just seasoned your soul, and Alex looked at him and said, thanks for the ride, and went ahead and jumped out, because those bundles were actually parachutes. And so, as we see, Alex's training with the SAS has suited him well. It was a little bit different because he doesn't have someone to like reassure him that his parachute works, that that everything was going to go well, but his training worked out for him here. Yeah. So,
well, and actually, he never jumped out of the plane in training.
Yeah, he pushed out Wolf.
Yeah, he knew how to like pack his parachute and make sure it was packed properly, but he had never actually jumped out. So this is actually a little bit of uncharted waters.
There's a lot of things Alex does in this chapter that are a bit out of character and stuff that he hasn't done yet. So, from there, as Alex jumped out, he was like, man, if I could have got to the Science Museum in 7 minutes in any other way, he would have taken it. This would have been like his last option, but he had no other option. So he went ahead and jumped on out. And as he jumped out, he closed his eyes, forced himself to count to three, and then pulled on the little parachute pull. And when Alex opened his eyes, he was surprised at just how calm it was, the parachute. You know, just like a nice old day, just being like, wow, look, I'm just falling, going to the ground, you know, doing my thing. And it almost, to him, felt like he wasn't moving at all. Now that he left the plane, the city seemed even more distant and unreal. And he was almost enjoying himself. Like, people parachute for fun, and so I think he's kind of seeing why people do that.
Yeah.
Well, then we get the drama noise where the plane comes back. Mr. Grin was not too happy with Alex's little stunt, so Mr. Grin wasn't going to let him get away so easily. He decided that he wanted to fly a plane into Alex, you know, just like, just play target practice with Alex while he's in the sky. But Alex had been cunning. He expected it. And so What did Alex do? Alex got big brain. He went and got his Game Boy, one of the little knickknacks he got from Mr. Smithers.
Is it
Smithers? Yeah. And decided, I got a game here called Bomber Boy. Maybe I should slide that underneath Mr. Grin's chair. And so he threw it under Mr. Grin's chair and before he jumped out. And now, as he was flying and seeing it come back, he just got his Game Boy out, tapped some buttons, and it blew up. But it didn't really blow up in the same way you think it did, because there's a big smoke bomb full of this, like, acritic yellow smoke. And so just like that, Mr. Grin vanished into a big cloud of smoke. And the plane wobbled a little bit and then plunged down. And Alex just stood there and he just watched the plane dive. He's like, haha, goodbye. And he just sat here and he's like, man, I could imagine Mr. Grin blinded fighting for control as the plane began to twist slowly and faster as the engines whined. And now it was headed straight for the ground, howling through the sky.
Alex literally killed a man.
I know. Oh, we're going to get back to this. And at the last minute, Mr. Grin managed to bring the plane of the nose back up. But in book fashion, it was too late. And the plane smashed into a deserted piece of dock.
I wouldn't say that's like typical book fashion, more as like physics and how the world works.
Yeah, yeah. I guess typically in books you would think that there would be the catch of like, ah, we thought we got him, but nah, he's back again. Like, but no, he crashes into a plane dock and does not make it. So this is the part that I was like, what the heck, Alex? You know how he, Alex is the cool guy, doesn't look at explosions kind of thing? After he just watches his plane slam into a dock, he just kind of looks at his watch. Yep, got 3 minutes. 3 minutes until 12.
I also forgot, like, I haven't read this book in a hot minute. I forgot that Mr. Grin turned the plane around and tried to, like, shred Alex up. I thought that was really, really funny.
Because, I mean, it's not like Mr. Grin was just like, oh, let's put this plane on autopilot. Let's go, like, pew-pew at him. It's like, no, let's just, like...
Well, it's a cargo plane. They don't have, like, guns on it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I just think it's really funny.
Yeah. So, with Alex just sitting here, just staring at his watch, being like, man, this is just another normal Tuesday. Just killed a man. He's like, well, I don't think I'm going to make it to the Science Museum unless I land right on their doorstep. So, this is where the scene changes. And now, we are inside the Science Museum from the eyes of other people. And so, we're inside the East Hall of the Science Museum, and Herod Sale was coming to the end of his speech. He sat here and was opening up for the world while he stood in front of a podium. Not only was the podium set up for him, it was set up for a few of the other really important people in Europe, or in the UK, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was the Prime Minister, his press secretary, and a few other people. But then, also in the crowd, we got a good old Alan Blunt, a familiar face, a Mrs. Jones, and Mrs. Jones was dressed in nice black with this, like, brooch, or brioche.
Brooch. It's a brooch.
I'm going to say brioche.
It's a weird word, but it's a brooch on her lapel.
Yeah. So, very elegant attire for everyone. And never before has a private individual ever made such a generous gift to the nation. This was an event, a history in the making. And this is where we get the, you know, this stereotypical Herod Sale, just talking in a strange manner. So, it is the Prime Minister and the Prime Minister alone who is responsible for what is about to happen. And I hope that tonight, when he reflects on what has happened today throughout this country, that he will remember our days together at school and everything he did at the time. I think it is tonight that the country will know him for the man he truly is. One thing is for sure, this is a day you will never forget.
In my notes, I have written, Sale's speech is petty AF.
Oh, it really is. Especially because we know his motive now. It's just like every line is like so tacky.
Yeah.
And so the Prime Minister, just a bit confused at this response, just like, I don't really know what to do, decides to go up and be the charismatic man that he is, and is like, I'm not quite sure how to respond to that. And then everyone goes crazy. They all start laughing. But also because they kind of, the Prime Minister has a big political majority, and so they're like, we're gonna laugh because we care about politics.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Herod Sale is like, ah, the table. Well, actually, before that, the Prime Minister is like, I'm glad Mr. Sale has such happy memories of our days at school together. And whether the Prime Minister realizes it or not, he might be really oblivious to why Harold Sale might be angry at him. Or maybe he's saying it for the cameras.
But, yeah.
But regardless, Harold Sale is like, ah, come here, come here. Here's the table beside the podium. And this is the master control. Click on the mouse and all the computers will come online. And the Prime Minister is like, all right, gotcha. About to do that. But then as soon as he's doing, you know, to help set the scene, as this moment is happening, somewhere outside, a clock strikes noon.
Bum.
Dun, dun, dun.
Horowitz does have a flair for the dramatic. I'll give him that.
Yeah. So then Alex, you know, pulls out his parachute. There's a lot of descriptive of, like, what it's looking like for Alex in as he's coming down and, like, looking around. But essentially, all he does is he pulls on his parachute a little bit, and he looks around, and he's like, I could land on this roof. This roof looks like a good place to land. He still has his gun on him that he'd taken from the guard a while back, and he'd somehow managed to maneuver himself over the museum. But he realized he was falling too fast, and he missed the roof. But one of the weird things about the Science Museum is it has two roofs, and one of them is made of this wired glass material, and the second one is like a plastic sheeting. So I'm guessing they were doing some construction, and there's some leaks and stuff like that. And so Alex, because he was zooming through the air, ended up crashing into the roof, and the roof shattered. And as he sort of fell through both of the two roofs, his parachute got caught on a beam, and this is what he saw. He saw the Stormbreaker at first, and then with a sense of disbelief, he recognized the Prime Minister standing, slack-jawed, next to Harold Sale. Alex hung in the air, dangling at the end of his parachute. I think it was just such a funny scene of, like, being in this museum and just, like, crashing through a roof but getting caught, and you're just like, ugh.
Hanging there? It's yeah. in the movie? Yeah, yeah.
No, it's so funny, because I'm guessing he's just sitting there, like, the emoji of just, like, the person just standing there, like, really awkwardly.
Imagine, like, you pull up, and then... I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to explain it. I just wrote... Well, I have notes for later about... Yeah. Yeah. It's very funny. I actually wrote, like, when Alex is going over the buildings and stuff, he describes this building called Albert Hall as a Victorian pile. I love his mind. Yeah. I love Alex. I love the way he describes things.
Yeah, yeah. So... Getting back into this...
I love how he ate, like, hates old stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, old stuff, bad.
Whether it be people or architecture or anything, he is a very modern man. So, the security men were the first ones to react. It's really interesting how they're described. It is just, like, instant they are there. Just within a crowd, they kind of materialize. Mm. And so, not only that, they have their guns drawn and they are pointed at Alex. But this is big moment. Yeah, he's just sitting there, like, kind of like, not a T-pose, but like the opposite. It's like, instead of his arms out, it's just like by his side, but it's like T-pose material.
He's literally just hanging out.
Yeah. Pun intended.
Pun intended.
So, the security guards come out with their guns pointed up at Alex, and Alex pulls out his own gun. Pew, pew. And he's like, maybe I have time to explain, but I doubt it. So, here's a little section that I was going to read that I thought was pretty important. Shoot first and ask questions later. That was a line from a bad film, but even bad films are sometimes right. He emptied the gun. The bullets echoed around the room, surprisingly loud. Now people were screaming, the journalists punching and pushing as they fought for cover. The first bullet slammed into the info desk. The second hit the Prime Minister in the hand, his finger less than an inch away from the mouse. The third hit the mouse, blowing it into fragments. The fourth hit an electrical connection, disintegrating the plug and short-circuiting it. Sale had dived forward, determined to click on the mouse himself, but the fifth and sixth bullets hit him. Dun, dun, dun. So one of the moments I want to say about this room... Oh, wait, there's a little bit more I was going to say, too. As soon as Alex had fired the last bullet, he dropped the gun, letting it clatter to the floor below, and he held up the palms of his hands. He felt ridiculous, hanging from the ceiling, his arms outstretched, but there were already a dozen guns pointing at him, and he had to show them that he was no longer armed, and that they didn't need to shoot. Even so, he braced himself, waiting for the security man to open fire. He could almost imagine the hail of bullets tearing into him. As far as they were concerned, he was some sort of crazy terrorist. But Miss Jones came in, got on the radio control, and said, don't shoot! do not shoot my man, Alex. And so he didn't get shot. But one of the reasons that this part is so important, everyone had always told Alex, no gun. No gun.
What I can't believe is Alex opened fire in a building with, like, a bunch of civilians. Sir, do you have a death wish? And then also, Alex does not know how to fire a gun. He has not received any training. And as far as I'm aware, he, like, never did anything with guns when he was with Ian. So the fact that he was lucky enough to, like, actually destroy the thing, but also, like, hit the Prime Minister and got a couple shots in for sale is, like, incredibly lucky.
It is every single bullet had a purpose.
Yeah.
The first one was attention. The second one was the hand. The third one was the mouse. The fourth one was the electrical connection. Fifth and sixth were sale. Every single one hit something important. Where, like, if just one of those didn't... Well, I mean, aside from the first one. But, like, if it didn't hit the Prime Minister and instead it missed, he would have hit the button. If it would have not hit the mouse, then someone else could have hit the button, like sale. It would not hit the electrical connection. There might have been enough, you know... Everyone had its own purpose.
Yeah. And but he literally shot the Prime Minister, and he honestly... could have killed the Prime Minister, so Alex was really taking a big risk.
Well, and then also that the security men, he had enough time to go pew, 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 before any of the security men were like pew.
Yeah. I can't believe he did that.
Yeah, so, you know, Alex being a bit ballsy, he makes the moment the best that he can. And so some security men run out, they grab the Prime Minister while he is clutching his hand, blood dripping from his hand, and Alan Blunt looks on, for the first time in his life, out of his depth. Ah, our man Alan! But the way this chapter ends is there was no sign of Herod Sale. The head of Sale Enterprises has been shot twice, but somehow he had disappeared. Dun, dun, dun!
I wonder what happened! How did he get away?
That, just the sheer chaos of, like, oh my god, I got shot. And then, but, like, in my head, if I got shot twice, I wouldn't have the, like, adrenaline foresight to be like, I should get out of here. Like, you would think you would have, like, either panic or, like, him freaking out being like, how do I get this to do it in the last seconds before he gets, like, taken?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but he slipped on out and he got away. There's a pretty intense chapter because this is where sort of the culmination of everything.
Mm-hmm.
But as we move into the next chapter... Next chapter has something that we like even more, and it is called Yasin. Both the chapter and the love of our life.
Yay! You're listening to KHDX.FM in Conway, Arkansas.
All my life, be my life on me. am a satellite, and I can't get back without you.
Idea of what's about to go down. And our chapter starts the day after
everything
happened, and we start in Royal and General Bank with Blunt congratulating Alex for exceeding expectations, even if he accidentally shot the Prime Minister. Alex likens it to a principal giving him a good report, and Jones offers Alex a peppermint that he refuses and thinks it might be all the reward he gets. The news won't be printing anything about a 14-year-old going through the roof of the Science Museum. Instead, it'll be an unknown terrorist organization that attacked Sale, which is kind of foreshadowing, yeah.
It's a bit uncanny, the connection in this moment.
Speaking as someone who has read all of the books, I'm just like, a terrorist organization.
Yeah. Especially when not connected to any, like, country or anything.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So Sale has not been found yet, and the Stormbreakers have been deemed faulty because, quote, anyone turning them on could get electrocuted, end quote, so they have been recalled. So Sale has been thwarted, and the virus that was put in the Stormbreakers is very lethal. And then we get this little scene. I will be playing Blunt and Jones, and Nathan will be playing Alex. All begin right. Scene.
Do we know who supplied it? Alex asked.
Blunt coughed. No.
How about the submarine that I saw?
Forget about the submarine. It was obvious Blunt didn't want to talk about it. You can just be sure we will make all the necessary inquiries.
What about Yasin Gagorovich?
Miss Jones took over. We've closed down the plant at Port Talon, she said. We already had most of the personnel under arrest. It's unfortunate, though, that we weren't able to talk to either Nadia Vole or the man you knew as Mr. Grin.
He never talked much anyways.
It was lucky that his plane crashed into a building site, Miss Jones went on. Nobody else was killed. As for Yasin, I imagine he'll disappear. From what you've told us, it's clear he wasn't actually working for Sale. He was working for the people who were sponsoring Sale, and I doubt they'll be very pleased with him. Yasin is probably on the other side of the world already. But one day, perhaps, we'll find him. We'll never stop looking. End scene.
Ooh.
Oh my god. They mentioned Yasin again. Oh my gosh. So they give Alex a letter, and Alex hopes it's a check, but it's actually a doctor's note explaining his absence, and he had a very bad flu for 3 weeks. Alex will be allowed to live in his uncle's house with Jack, and quote, "That way, we'll always know where you are if we need you again," end quote. And Alex is like, whoa, hold on.
But I'm also guessing that means they are giving Jack the green light because of Alex's good work.
Yes, they're going to be, like, clearing her visa. They'll be, like, giving her a green card again. And then we have this little scene, and I will be playing Alex and Blunt, and Nathan will be playing Miss Jones, so... Begin scene. "You've got to be kidding," he said. "No," Blunt gazed at him quite coolly. "It's not my habit to make jokes."
"You've done very well, Alex," Miss Jones said, trying to sound more conciliatory. "The Prime Minister himself asked us to pass on his thanks to you, and the fact of the matter is that you could be wonderfully useful to have someone as young as you."
"As talented as you," Blunt cut in.
"Available to us from time to time." She held up her hand to ward off any argument. "Let's not talk about it now," she said. "But if another situation arises, maybe we can talk about it then."
"Yeah, sure." Alex looked from one to the other. These weren't people who were going to take no for an answer. In their own way, they were as charming as Mr. Grin. "Can I go?" he asked.
"Of course you can," Miss Jones said. "Would you like someone to drive you home?"
"No, thanks." Alex got up. "I'll find my own way." End scene. Ooh. Alex is such an emo.
Yeah. It is him standing up.
I gotta go my own way.
It is him standing up to authority in every instance he can. I think he's just also, like, annoyed with these people. He is like,
I would be too.
He is like, I did all of this for you guys, and you're giving me a note saying I had the flu, no money, you're sending me back home, and you're telling me I'm gonna have to do this again? That's rude.
Yeah.
I bet they even give him, like, a good quality, like, meal.
Yeah, I know. And like you said, he's not getting paid. They're giving him a really flimsy excuse for missing school. And they're also saying you're allowed to live, like, in your home.
Yeah.
And he's basically also at their beck and call now.
And he's probably so far behind on homework. Yeah. Like, just where we're at in college, I can't imagine what missing 3 weeks of school would be like.
Yeah, I mean, it probably isn't as bad as missing school would be for us, but still, it's like, you miss 3 weeks of school, you're going to miss something.
Yeah.
You know? And people are going to notice that you're gone, too.
Well, and also, he does have big brain, so he's probably okay, but still, though, it's a lot.
Yeah. And, like, this scene had a lot of important stuff, so I wanted to make sure we talked about it and presented it faithfully.
Yeah.
They're kind of counting on pulling Alex into the field again, and there are more books, so obviously he does. Alex makes his way out of the bank and thinks about how he and James Bond are not different because of age, but because of loyalty.
I thought that quote was, like, needlessly deep. Alex was forced into this while
Bond did it because he loved his country.
Yes.
I mean, it's, like, a valid point because a lot of people are going to be comparing the book to Bond. So.
I mean, and also Anthony Horowitz... with his love for Bond, he is like, I want to make this like Bond, but different.
But different.
Yeah.
Bond, but make it blackmail. So, Alex is like, Bond had an option, but Alex was never given the choice. And he specifically feels used, which, like, has to be damaging to a kid's psyche. And Alex is walking out of the building, and he sees a cab and decides to flag it down and take the cab instead of public transport. Treat yourself, King. And,
Well, maybe not.
Yeah, he tells the taxi driver where to go. It's, I think, Cheyenne Walk, which is for, like, the uber rich. So, okay, pop off,
The guy has, like, this really poorly knitted sweater on, and it's just, like, hunched over the steering wheel. And he's just, like, looks a bit disgruntled.
The driver turns around, and he has a gun, and he points it at Alex, and surprise, it's Herod Sale, and he,
impossibly.
Like, yeah. He's looking pretty decent for taking two bullets. He's, like, the fact that he's up and walking is amazing, but he is very pale and looks like he's in pain. And Sale threatens Alex, being like, I will shoot you, and then they drive towards the city. I don't know what the city is. They never get more specific than that.
Probably just London.
No idea. Maybe it's a section of London.
Yeah.
And Alex is trying to figure out what to do, but he's in such a tight space, and Sale is such a loose cannon, he can't afford to do anything risky. Sale pulls up to a skyscraper and tells Alex that they will walk into the building, and if Alex runs, he will get shot.
There was a line here that I thought was really interesting. It was like, his voice was pure venom. Mm. It is like one of the few lines where I am like, okay, Mr. Horowitz, that was good. That was good. I like that one.
A good moment. Yeah. Sale, Alex mentions that Sale was probably shot in his left arm and shoulder, but Sale has the gun in his right hand. Alex gets out of the car, and Sale puts the gun to his lower back, and they walk in to the skyscraper. The lobby is empty, they get into a waiting elevator and go to the 29th floor, and Alex has the audacity to say, quote, "Are we going up for the view?" end quote. Alex literally, he cannot help himself. I don't mind, particularly.
Yeah, he has no self-control when it comes to making the poorly timed jokes.
In Devil in the Deep Blue Sea, that's like the first thing to go. Yasin is like, listen, kid. No more sass in the adults, because they will actually kill you.
Yeah.
Alex continues to think about fighting back, but Sale is still too, like, worked up, and Alex is worried about actually dying, which is nice. Sale tells him to turn left when the elevator doors open, and they see a door marked helipad, and Sale tells Alex to open it. So they go out, and they are on a flat roof, and there's a metal fence around the perimeter, and there's a giant red cross on it for a helicopter to land. And Alex and Sale are standing at the edge of this, like, giant cross. And Alex notes that it had felt like a nice spring day, but up here, quote, "the wind streaked past and the clouds boiled," end quote. I thought it was a cool, like, descriptor of
how
things
have
changed.
What does it mean for clouds to boil?
I don't really know. I guess they're, like, moving quickly and changing quickly,
yeah.
So.
Like
it reflects how things have gotten turbulent.
Yeah.
Ooh. And we are going to now read the final scene, and it will actually bring us to the conclusion of the book. I will be reading as Herod and another character, and Nathan will be reading as Alex. So,
all right.
Begin scene. "You ruined everything," Sale howled. "How did you do it? How did you trick me? I'd have beaten you if you'd been a man, but they had sent a boy, a bloody schoolboy. Well, it isn't over yet. I'm leaving England. That's why I brought you here. I wanted you to see."
Sale nodded, and Alex turned around to see that there was a helicopter hovering in the air behind him. Where it had come from? It was a painted red and yellow, a light single-engine aircraft with a figure in dark glasses and a helmet hunched over the controls. The helicopter was a fancy helicopter. One of the quietest in the world. It swung around over him, its blades beating the air.
"That's my ticket out of here," Sale continued. "They'll never find me, and one day I'll be back. Next time nothing will go wrong, and you won't be here to stop me. This is the end for you. This is where you die."
There was nothing Alex could do. Sale raised the gun and took aim, his eyes wide, the pupils blacker than they had ever been, mere pinpricks in the dulging white. There were two small explosive cracks. Alex looked down, expecting to see blood. There was nothing. He couldn't feel anything. Then Sale staggered and fell on his back. There were two gaping holes in his chest.
The helicopter landed in the center of the cross. The pilot got out, still holding the gun that had killed Herod Sale. He walked over and examined the body, prodding it with his shoe. Satisfied, he nodded to himself, tucking the gun away. He had switched off the engine of the helicopter, and behind him, the blade slowed down and stopped. Alex stepped forward. The man seemed to notice him for the first time.
"You're Yasin Gogorovich," Alex said.
The Russian nodded. It was impossible to tell what was going on in his head. His clear blue eyes gave nothing away.
"Why'd you kill him?" Alex asked.
"Those were my instructions." There was no trace of an accent in his voice. He spoke softly, reasonably. He had become an embarrassment. It was better this way.
"Not better for him?"
Yasin shrugged.
"What about me?"
The Russian ran his eyes over Alex, as if weighing him up. "I have no instructions concerning you," he said.
"You're not going to shoot me too?"
"Do I have any need to?" There was a pause. The two of them gazed at each other over the corpse of Herod Sale.
"You killed Ian Ryder. He was my uncle."
Yasin shrugged. I kill a lot of people.
One day, I'll kill you.
A lot of people had tried. Yasin smiled. Believe me, he said. It would be better if we didn't meet again. Go back to school. Go back to your life. And the next time they ask, say no. Killing is for grown-ups, and you're still a child. He turned his back on Alex and climbed into the cabin. The blade started up, and a few seconds later, the helicopter rose back into the air. For a moment, it hovered at the side of the building. Behind the glass, Yasin raised his hand. A gesture of friendship? A salute?
Alex raised his hand. The helicopter spun away. Alex stood where he was, watching it, until it disappeared in the dying light.
End quote. End scene. End chapter. End book.
End!
Oh my god!
The first season of the podcast. Not quite yet, but we're... The main content has all been uncovered.
Isn't that end fantastic?
It leaves a lot of... I feel like he was trying to end the book in a way where if he never wrote another book, it would have closure, but also leaves a lot of doors open for many new books ahead.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and that is where the next book, Point Blank, will begin.
I know. So, like... One of the biggest things that I wanted to point out is, like, one, there's a lot of hints of good writing coming into this scene. Like, it's well-written, well-paced. It's got a lot of tension, and then Yasin pulls up, and you get this really, like, enigmatic character. Like, you don't really understand why he's doing the things he's doing, which is what part of what makes writing fan fiction with Yasin so hard is, like, we don't really get a lot from Yasin. We don't really know his motives. He's so mysterious. Still, people still, like, do an amazing job writing his character.
Yeah, yeah.
But one of the biggest things is Yasin never confirms or denies that he killed Ian Ryder.
Mm-hmm.
So, that means MI6 could have been the people who killed him.
With our hypothesis from a couple episodes ago.
Exactly. Also, Yasin works for some strange organization that MI6 doesn't want Alex to know about.
Yeah.
I wonder why. Do you know?
No, but...
I know why.
One of the things that we mentioned earlier was in a different version of the book, when Alex references the submarine, he says the submarine was Chinese, and Alan just instantly was, like, dismissive of it. It is, like, any time that Alex tries to get a hint of, like, what this group is, it's just nothing.
Yeah.
And so, maybe we're on to something with that.
Maybe we are.
So...
But I wonder why... Why don't they want Alex to know about this strange organization that Yasin is involved in?
I think it's easier for them to think of... Or to give Alex one villain, you know? Like, to... If Alex is like, I need to get vengeance, well then let's assign him the one person he could never get vengeance on.
Well, like, he's not being, like, assigned vengeance on Yasin.
Well, yeah.
You know?
But it's... If Alex were to want to get revenge, you know, for Ian's death, I'm assuming Yasin would be the one that...
Oh, you're saying that, like, MI6 has the option to be, like... They've already told him that Yasin killed his uncle. So
yes.
It gives Alex motive to, like, actually go after Yasin. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Because then, if they were like, oh, we did it, then they're just going to be like... Then Alex would be like, we'll never work with you. Mm-hmm. But when you have drive now...
Yeah. Also, for reasons I can't explain, Alex would probably be their best bet at getting someone close to Yasin and killing him. For reasons I can't get into.
A lot to unpack and a lot to be excited about. Alex used a gun for the first time. He jumped out of a plane. He got kidnapped by a man who got shot. He met Yasin face to face. So much to unpack.
Also, Alex basically doesn't really have another conversation with Yasin for a hot minute after this book, which really sucks. But you know.
It leaves this really open-ended until future books where... I mean, eventually, I think this guy might become a slightly important character considering there's an entire book about him.
Yeah.
So, Yasin's someone that I kind of keep an eye on.
I mean, there's a reason everyone in the fandom is, like, so crazy about Yasin. Not just because he's hot and, like, mysterious.
The 5'8" dancer man.
He's just such an interesting character. And the more you get to know about him, the more you understand, like, why people are interested in his relationship with Alex. So yeah, really, really, I don't know. It's a really solid ending to his book.
You're listening to KHDX.FM in Conway, Arkansas.
Since we finished up Stormbreaker, we will be covering Point Blank, which is the second book, and I will be covering it with my friend Owen, and in the future for the show, we might talk about the Stormbreaker movie, or even start talking about the Alex Rider TV show once we finish up Point Blank, because the TV show is actually a mix, the first season of the TV show is a mix of Stormbreaker and Point Blank. It mixes like the inciting incident of Stormbreaker with the plot of Point Blank. And I also wanted to talk about the TV show because they released the season 2 trailer and I'm so excited. It looks so like, I think a lot of people when they talk about like their favorite thing getting turned into a TV show or a movie, they're like, they don't really care about how it looks. They're like, it looks great. I'm so excited and stuff like that. I think the season 2 trailer for Alex Rider season 2 looks,
it's so, so
no
good.
Joke, so good. It looks so exciting.
And as of us recording it right now, it is 1 month until it comes out.
Yeah, it comes out on December 3rd. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
About 4 weeks and the whole season drops.
I know. So exciting. I don't want to binge it, but I think I'm going to end up binging it so I can... You know, talk to people on the Discord about it.
Yeah. I mean, it would be really hard for you, especially with how much you enjoy this, to not, like, to hold yourself back to, like, one episode at a time.
Yeah, I mean, Candlelights will also be happening at the same time, so I think I'll actually have time to do it, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. So excited.
Are they releasing all the episodes at once?
Yes, unfortunately.
Ooh, I mean, I'd say that's a bad thing.
I think it's a bad thing, because you don't really get to, like, savor it. I'm definitely not going to savor it. I'm going to watch as much of it as I can, and, you know.
Regardless, I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah. So. I'm super looking forward to it. I'm hoping they change some elements of... They're mixing Skeleton Key and Eagle Strike.
Okay.
I'm hoping they change some things.
Yeah.
So, manifesting that.
I think our man Tom will be there for most of the season.
Tom has been the guy who plays Tom, I should say, and Tom himself, have been in a lot of the promotional material. They are changing some aspects of the books. Like, Alex is basically a loner in the books, which is really sad and depressing. So they were like, we're going to add more Tom action in the TV show.
Give him a Robin.
Give him, like, I don't know. What do you mean by a Robin?
The Batman and Robin, like a sidekick, almost.
Yeah, I guess Tom is the sidekick. They give Tom a little bit more. They also give Jack a little bit more. And then they also introduce this character, Kyra, and she is going to be in the second season, so Alex will have his gang of teenagers to hang out
with. Is that his love interest?
No, because they also introduced Sabina.
And is that his love interest?
I don't know.
Does Alex have one?
I have no idea. So in the book series, they kind of touch on, like, Alex maybe having a crush on Sabina. We haven't met Sabina yet. Mm-hmm. She doesn't matter.
Yeah.
She's kind of Alex's love interest, but not really.
Yeah.
I don't know if he will have a love interest in the TV show. He's had some, like, romantically coded moments with Kyra.
Yeah.
But I don't know if anything's going to come of it. And I don't know. I told you, I sent you that thing, or I put it on my story, where the Alex Rider official Instagram is, like, shipping Tom and Alex, and I'm like, y'all can't be doing this.
I think for show purposes, they're probably going to give Alex some sort of love interest, especially for season 2. But will it be Tom?
It definitely won't be.
It would be really funny if it was.
This is what fan fiction is for.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't think there is good enough material in the books to warrant Alex having a love interest or, like, a romantic relationship with Tom.
Yeah.
So that's what fan fiction is for. I don't know. I wouldn't mind if Alex never has a love interest, because that's never, like, the focus of the books. And I think it would take away from the story.
I think you're right, too. I'm trying to just think of, like, what they might change for the TV show to kind of create more draw.
They probably will add a love interest. I don't know who it'll be. They might lean more towards Kyra, because, I don't know.
More consistent character.
Yeah, and, like, all the stuff with Sabina in the books was never really good to begin with, so they might just be like, Sabina's a lost cause. We're going to put all the new stuff with Kyra.
Yep.
So, yeah.
But Alex's support group grows.
Yeah. So exciting. I'm super happy. So, next week we will be covering the first 3 chapters of Point Blank. Make sure you tune in. And our code word... Oh, wait. I need to do the fic rec. Oh my god, I forgot.
Yes.
So, this week's fic recommendation is An Unlikely Alliance by Moore Fox on Archive of Our Own, and it was written for the fandom's annual SpyFest event. This fic is not set in a specific timeline for the Alex Rider universe, but it does involve a character we haven't met in the books yet, which is Tom Harris. But if you have watched at least one episode of the TV show, then you know him, so you're good. And let's see. This is like a quote from the summary bit. Over the years, Tom had found it easy to make new friends, but even he would admit perhaps this was taking it a bit too far, in which Tom makes an unlikely acquaintance. Ooh. End quote. So this fic is a perfect short Alex Rider fic, And I think it highlights a lot of the humor and creativity that the writers in the fandom have. And I really love it. And I figured with the way the book ends, we should have a fun little thick treat afterwards.
Yep.
So that is my recommendation. And
so our code word.
Our code word this week is helicopter. So if you're listening, let us know by dropping the code word when you see Nathan or me. And this is Ride or Die signing out. Ooh. End transmission.
Goodbye, goodbye. We got the whole world ahead and the whole world behind. Whole world ahead and the whole world behind. Whole world ahead and the whole world behind. You're the whole world and the world is mine.